Welcome to the Tradeswomen Australia podcast series that promotes women in trades. Here you'll hear stories of success and ambition from some of the industry's most inspirational women.
And one of the things I say to them is, you get a trade, you can go anywhere.
Today I'm speaking with Donna, a mechanical fitter and machinist. Her career has given her the opportunity to work overseas and in many different roles within the mining industry. She is now a maintenance supervisor, and I bet you're going to love her story.
Hi, my name is Donna. I am a maintenance supervisor for a heavy haulage railway. I'm also a mother of three, and I've been in and out of the trades for 22 years.
So Donna, where are you currently working, and what does your role as a maintenance supervisor involve?
So we're a heavy haulage railway. It's a Rio Tinto railway. So what we haul is iron ore. So we're only iron ore. We're a privately owned railway. And so like BHP, Rio Tinto and a couple of other smaller miners have privately owned networks, whereas sort of on the east coast and stuff, they use third party to ship all their ore, and it's sometimes a mix of, you know, like on one line you might have coal and then you might have freight and you might have a couple of other things as well, whereas with us we are purely private and just ship iron ore. So, and we're pretty much the largest heavy haulage railway, definitely in Australia. There's the only bigger ones that I think are in like the state. So we've got 16 mines and over 1,200 kilometres of track. And so my job is to, I am a maintenance supervisor in the machine shop. And so the machine shop reprofiles the wheels for all the rolling stock wagons. And we've got over 12,000 wagons, and there is four wheel sets on every wagon. So we've got a lot of wheel sets that we machine. So I look after the plant maintenance, and the guys do the operating. So we've got machinists and maintainers that do all that work, and I've got a crew of those guys that I look after.
Wow, I can imagine you'd be very busy, and working on a heavy haulage railway sounds fascinating. Can you walk us through a day in your shoes?
So a typical day is my alarm goes off at 4:20 in the morning, and I don't hit snooze because if I did, I wouldn't get out of bed. So I get up, get ready. I'm a bit of a ninja in the morning because I don't want to wake the kids up, and out the door, start work at 5:00, do a handover with the night shift supervisor, so this is for a day shift, then prep for the day, so we've got production targets that we need to hit, and then if there's any maintenance that needs to be completed for the day, I allocate the tasks to my crew. We run a pre-start meeting, so that covers safety and production, and we have a set format that we cover for that that's business-wide. And then after that, we get into the day, and then I can be attending different planning meetings or maintenance meetings, dealing with any breakdowns, dealing with contractors that we have come to site. We've also got contractors that work permanently in our crew. Go through that, then sort of the end of the day, start prepping for handover. The night shift supervisor will come in at 5:00 in the afternoon, do the handover, and then come home, have some dinner with the kids, help with the bedtime routine, put them to bed, hopefully have a chat with my husband, and then, go to bed and start all over again. So I do 3 day shifts, which are 12.5 hours, and then I go 3 night shifts, again 12.5 hours, and then I have 6 days off.
Well, that sounds like a very intense day. You must have to be pre-planned and very organised.
I try to be. So I have a thing where I say I've got my day shift life, my night shift life, and my days off life. They're a bit different, but yeah. My husband is exceptional. We dual parent, and because like I said, when I'm on shift, he's at home. So he has all that stuff sorted with the kids and that. So couldn't do it without him and the support of him to run the family.
Well, hard hats off to your husband. Now, your career has been very interesting, and I can't wait to get into it, but do you want to start with where it all started and why you decided to pursue an apprenticeship?
At high school, I was interested in the manual arts, they used to call it back then, so the woodwork, metalwork, stuff like that, and my dad's an electrician, so I had exposure to the trades, and I grew up in mining towns, so I actually did my high school in Karratha, the town I live in now. And so I was just really interested in that practical work. And so I started exploring the trades and landed on being a mechanical fitter by the time I was about 14. So I continued doing all the manual arts at school. often the only girl in the class towards the pointy end of high school, but then started applying for apprenticeships in year 11, and I did a heck of work experience. We had some in-school work experience programs, so I got exposure to a few different areas. And then, yeah, just kept working through that and applying for apprenticeships, and at the end of year 12, I got accepted to do an apprenticeship as a mechanical fitter and machinist with Woodside, which is a big oil and gas producer up here. So I did a four-year apprenticeship with them and finished with Woodside because they let their apprentices go, except they would take on one apprentice at the end of every year at Woodside, and then everyone else said let go. So I got let go from there and decided to move down south. My dad was working on construction at Worsley and Luna, so I decided to check that out, and I ended up with a job which was an engineering assistant for CBI, and they were doing all the tanks and the pipe work for the project. It was an expansion project for Worsley. So I did that for 10 months and got some money together and decided to travel overseas.
So you headed overseas with your qualification, and where was it that you started out?
I moved to London, and my sister was already living over there, so I hung out with her for a bit and then, you know, found my own share house over there. To start with, I actually just worked in a bookshop just to get some cash and travel around. And then I eventually made my way into a construction company. And I was actually in a building construction team, but we were doing the punch listing on a university. So just all the final, I don't know if they call them punch lists or anyway, the final stuff that the client has said, oh, we'd like to get this fixed or changed or whatever. So myself, there was myself, another fitter, electrician, a cladder. So like we were a small crew. We used to go around the uni and finish up all the bits and pieces. So I did a lot of different jobs with that crew.
Wow. So being a fitter, was it hard to translate those skills into building and construction?
I mean, I think part of it's because in the UK, if you turn up with a Australian trade certificate, they just love you. They just, you know, they really appreciate how well we're trained over here. And because they've had times over there where their trade sort of fell away, and so they might not have had as qualified people as they would have liked. So as soon as you say you're an Aussie tradie, they just love you. I think I put my name down at a labour hire business, and then it just sort of evolved into that. And then, yeah, like they wanted to have a fitter on their crew because we used to do like all sorts of stuff, like pumps and bits and pieces, and it was a real myriad of different things. And yeah, I just started working with that crew and had a great time. We had a Spanish team admin who became a good friend of mine, and we had English and Aussie, and it was a real mix. We had a Croatian guy, so it was, yeah, it was a really good experience. Then my visa expired in the UK, so I had to decide to come home or try and travel somewhere else, and I actually decided that I would stay overseas, and I moved to Ireland, and I lived in Dublin. And so I actually got a job as a sprinkler fitter in Dublin, so that's the emergency safety sprinkler systems that you see in the industrial buildings. So we did brand new installs and changes and repairs and whatnot to systems over there. So I did that for about another 10 months working with the crew over there. And that was great fun. And then my visa expired over there as well, so it was time to come home.
Donna, your apprenticeship really did open up so many doors for you, didn't it?
Yeah, look, and that's, I work a lot now with our trade training team at Rio, and I go and talk to people who are looking for apprenticeships. I go and talk to the apprentices that we have in the company, and one of the things I say to them is, you get a trade, you can go anywhere. And I tell them how I worked and lived overseas for 3 years and how I use my trade, and that you can use it in different fields. You know, don't think just because you might do a, you know, heavy machinery trade or a fitting trade or whatever that you can't use it in other areas, because it's all nuts and bolts and you just got to get out there and explore.
So true, and what an amazing experience you've had. What did you end up doing when you came back to Australia?
So I came home and then I started working for BGC Contracting, and I worked with them as a heavy duty fitter. And I did that for a while, working FIFO on different sites, so working on all the heavy equipment. And then a job came up back in Karratha, so I decided to go residential again from working FIFO.
A little FYI for those listeners that don't know, FIFO is fly in, fly out. Residential is living on site.
So then moved back to Karratha and then worked for BGCF for a little bit longer and then decided to get out. And I actually started working for a fire safety company. So I did fire safety systems. So the big foam systems that you see on earth moving equipment and then fire extinguishers and smaller bits. And also we used to sell safety gear. So I got into all of that sort of stuff. And then I applied for a job at Rio Tinto and it was actually as an occupational health technician. So that's someone that goes around and does all the occupational monitoring. So dust, noise, diesel particulates, fumes, stuff like that. So I worked as a tech for a couple of years. Then I actually got married and had my first child and went on maternity leave. And when I came back, really the only options for part-time work were admin roles. So I took on the team administrator role when I came back from maternity leave. I was working part-time, so a couple of days a week. And that role had document control in it as well because as an accredited railway, we have to have a document management system for all of our safety procedures and operating procedures and stuff like that. So I did that as part of my role and then sort of evolved into leading up a document control team within the division and built that up as the demand got greater and then went and had another child and then came back and did a bit of part-time and a bit of full-time and my husband stayed at home for 6 months with our second child while I came back to work full-time and then when I went back to work part-time, still leading the dot control team and did that for 5 years all up and then had another baby, so that's the third and last one and came back from having her and my husband decided, well, as a team, we decided that he would stay home full-time with the kids. And so then I came back to work full-time and then the opportunity for a maintenance supervisor's role came up and I took that role and that's when I started this current role that I'm in and I've been doing it for 3 years now.
And for any listener that might be considering stepping up and taking on a management or supervisor role, what are some of the skills and maybe some of the extra training that you went through to help you get there? And what advice would you have for them?
Like Rio are well known for doing internal training, leadership training. So I've done those different training sessions over the years. I have done some external leadership training as well. Certificate 4 in frontline leadership. It's a really good one to get under your belt if you want to do leadership. But really, the biggest thing is just to show leadership within the team you're in anyway. So, you know, lead by example, be prepared to step up. We use a 2IC system at work. So we've got actings that, you know, because if I'm sick or take leave or whatever, I have an acting supervisor who steps up. You know, be prepared to take on those sorts of roles to get experience. And even stuff like if there's an on-the-job trainer role, put your hand up for that, or safety rep. You know, those sorts of things all help you to get experience and to be able to feed into doing leadership.
And what are some of the key qualities and skills that you would look for in someone who might be applying to be part of your team?
Our team dynamic, because we've got the smaller teams, you know, less than 10 people, team dynamics is a really good thing. Like for me, I'm very open and honest and my team know where they stand with me and I just expect the same back. You know, I want people to feel that they can approach me and tell me if there's any issues and also just to get along. And I'm very much the, you know, you're big enough and ugly enough to know what you need to do. So just get on with it sort of thing. So yeah, I just think, you know, I have it so that my team come to work, I expect them to do their job, but I expect them to have a good time at the same time. So, you know, we get along, we'll have a, you know, team barbie every now and again, we'll, you know, have a bit of a laugh and you're there, you know, you spend so much time at work, you're there to have a bit of fun as well, get your job done.
Donna, it sounds like you're a great team leader. Look, I want to get into that a little bit more in just a second because it kind of relates back to one of your big achievements and what I commonly like to call a hero moment. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your hero moments?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, one of the biggest achievements that I've had, which wasn't linked to trades, but I received the 2015 Citizen of the Year for the city of Karratha, and I loved getting that recognition because I'm very much part of my community as well. And so I've done volunteering within the city of Karratha for 20 years in different aspects, and especially with my kids, I'm involved in the community groups and stuff. So for me to get that prize, I guess, or that recognition was just absolutely awesome. You don't do, when you're a volunteer and stuff, you don't do it for that, but to be recognised is just the icing on the cake. And the other stuff within my trade is actually the small things like, you know, for Mother's Day just gone, my team actually bought me flowers for Mother's Day, and they put on their Happy Mother's Day, Mum, from your C panel kids. And, like, that was really sweet in the fact that they actually, you know, thought about it, knew it was Mother's Day, took the effort, you know, put some money together and actually bought me some flowers. So, you know, I put a lot of time and effort into them, and, you know, I think they're a great team. And they're my team. I'm very protective of them. So for me to have that sort of reciprocated was really lovely. Made me feel pretty special.
That's so awesome. They sound lovely. And I guess a really important question that comes out of that is, what's some really good leadership skills that you have or commonly use to bring your team together like that and have that mutual respect?
I think, like, for me, like, I'm obviously a bit of a different supervisor to the blokes. You know, not to say I'm better or worse or whatever, but I think, you know, with my team, I think, like, there's one thing is that I care about them. And I think you've got to start with that. You've actually got to care about them as people and know a bit about them. Like, I'm very much of the opinion that, you know, they're not my friends because I'm their leader and it just makes it too complicated. But that still doesn't mean that I don't care about them, that I don't know about them and their families and what's going on in their lives and stuff like that. And then, like I said before, I'm just really clear with my expectation of them. And then, you know, it's so much easier for people to perform when they know what's expected of them.
And Donna, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a tricky question. What are some of the unexpected benefits that have come from your career and your apprenticeship?
Oh, look, that's not a tricky question for me at all. You know, for me, having job security, as much as you can nowadays anyway, but, you know, I earn good money, I can provide for myself and my family. You know, I've got a transferable skill, you know, a maintenance supervisor I can take anywhere, or, you know, even just the trade, taking that anywhere. It's just for me to be able to do what I like to do and provide for my family at the same time. So,
and will you be encouraging your kids to pursue an apprenticeship pathway?
Yeah, we talk about it. It's really interesting, actually, because you are still battling against, you know, society and school and everything else. You know, they know what Mum does, and they've been to my workshop and see what I play with, and it's not unusual for them, and especially, you know, having their dad home and stuff. But still, you know, you ask my eldest daughter what she wants to do. Oh, I want to be a vet, or I want to be a hairdresser, you know, because she loves animals and she loves hair. You know, she's only 10, so we've got time. The middle child, Caitlin, she came out about a year ago, said she wanted to be a builder, which was great. So we were encouraging that because I was like, great, you can build mummy a house. But she's now turned a little bit more towards the arts and wants to be a teacher, art teacher. So, you know, I'll be happy with whatever my kids want to do as long as they have a job that provides for them and they can be self-sufficient. Financial security is a really big thing for me, and especially for women, you know, with the pay gap and the super issues we have and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just want my kids to be able to live independently and enjoy what they do. But if they decide to take a trade, obviously I'll be very, very pleased.
I think it's great that your daughter even considered a building trade career. I didn't know about that sort of stuff when I was in primary school, and it would be great if we had someone out there promoting to schools. Is that something you've thought about doing yourself?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I go talk to the schools locally as well, and one of the things I want to do is start talking to the year sevens and eights to just plant that seed, because it's one of those things that they don't, it's not really even in the forefront of their mind to even consider it. And I think you really need to be able to plant that seed early. So, yeah, they may or may not choose to go down that path, but at least they know it's an option to them. I went and did one talk about a year or so ago at a school, and I said, okay, so you know, mining companies, what do you reckon the jobs are that women do at mining companies? And, you know, they said finance and HR and admin and stuff. And I was like, oh, well, that's not it, you know. I'm a maintenance supervisor. There's other jobs you can do there. So it's really, yeah, they just get so pigeonholed in what they think is what they can do. So if we can just open up the options, then I think, you know, we'll get more people. And then, yeah, it might be that they don't actually nail it until they're in their 20s, but at least then it's more that it's a considered thought process.
And what else do you think we could all be doing to encourage more women into the industry?
I really think a lot of it is visibility. Because there's so few of us, the ones that are there, we really have to get out and about, and we have to, you know, let everyone know that this is what we do and how we do it. And, you know, and it's unfortunate that we're the ones that have to be more proactive than industry itself. But I think if we can drive from the inside, you know, to get our industries to step up and to promote, put our faces out there, you know, put programs together where they go to schools. So you've got someone coordinating that rather than someone just having to do it off their own back. But yeah, I think it's just getting out there. It's that old adage that you can't beat if you can't see it. So the more that we can just be out there and be visible, I think the better it'll be. And I'm part of an organisation called Trade Up Australia, which is WA based, which a young female electrical apprentice started a few years ago. And, you know, she's great, just her drive and passion and stuff. So I try to do stuff and promote Trade Up in the Northwest because it's mostly Perth based.
Thanks, Donna. We're kind of getting close to the end of our time together. So I just quickly wanted to ask if there's anything else you think you might want to leave us with?
We don't know. I think, yeah, with me, I'm just really passionate about it. I just want to see so many more women in trades and, you know, because I think for me it's just about everything. You know, like I said, it's about financial security. It's about giving our girls a future. It's about changing workplaces and dynamics and cultures and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I think trades is a really good way to make that happen. And because I think if our girls are more financially secure and, you know, employable and everything else, then, you know, and obviously for industry it's great because then they've got 50% extra population they can tap into. I'm being biased, but girls can be much better tradies than boys. So.
Oh, totally.
Does this figure surprise you that less than 3% of the industry is made up of women?
No. I'd like to say yes, but no. I think what surprised me is because I was out of the trade for a while, when I got back into it, the numbers really disappointed me. Like, because to me it feels like, especially mechanical trades, it feels like the same as when I did my apprenticeship 20 years ago. So it feels like we haven't moved forward like we should have in 20 years. So, I mean, in my workshop, like I have hundreds of people work in my workshop, like the whole place. I'm the only female supervisor. I've got a female apprentice. There's a couple of female TAs. And then on the other side of the fence in locos, we've got about 3 or 4 female tradies and no female leadership over there. That's changing though. Apparently we're getting a female superintendent. But so that's just a small portion and the numbers are really dismal. And then for Rio Tinto itself, it looks like there's only 2 female trade qualified maintenance supervisors in the whole of iron ore. So we're talking thousands and thousands of people. And, you know, obviously the tradies only make up a portion of that. But to only have, out of all the maintenance supervisors we have in the business, to only have 2 female trade qualified ones is pretty sad.
Oh, geez, I wish there was more women out there that wanted to be in the industry. Why do you think this number is so dismal?
Oh, look, I think it's a mix of a lot of things. I think it's that old adage that, you know, females will do a trade, but then when they have kids, how do they manage to go back to the trades? Like I said, like when I had my kids, like admin was pretty much the only part-time work you could do. So one of the things I do is really try and advocate, and I'm only just at the very tip of it, but, you know, we need to look at, yes, okay, we work a 24-hour operation, but that doesn't mean we can only work 12-hour shifts, right? So we need to look at, because flexible work arrangements work really well in admin or in professional roles, why can't we apply them in, you know, trade roles or whatever? And the business, And the industry in general is just really apprehensive to start down that path. And, you know, and that will benefit the blokes as well as the women. But we need to look at, you know, retention. So if we've got female tradies on the shop floor now and they're going off and having kids, what are we doing about it? How are we bringing them back into the business and how are we maintaining their skills? And that's one big gap that I've found that I'd really like to target, because I think if we don't work on our retention as well as getting them in the first place, we're just going to still end up, you know, years down the track without the leadership, because you've got to retain them to get them into leadership. And, you know, we're just not going to have numbers. You can't push people up the chain when the numbers aren't there either. So.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And if there's listeners that might want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
I hope you really liked my interview. If anyone would like to discuss anything further in regards to my story or how I can help you in any way, please get in contact with Tradeswomen Australia and they'll pass on the details.
And thank you for tuning into today's show. If you want to stick around for some special show notes, please do. On the 29th and 30th of August 2018, Tradeswomen Australia is hosting a cubby building contest. Two teams of male and female apprentices will battle it out under the watchful eye of WorldSkills Australia and our guest judges. This competition promotes the skills of young Australians and the benefits of sourcing a diverse workforce. The cubbies will be auctioned for women in trades groups to continue supporting and introducing more women into trades. Let's all work together to increase the number of women in trades, a figure that is estimated to sit below 3%. To find out more information and get involved, you can contact Tradeswomen Australia through the website or info@twaus.com.au. Information will be in the show notes. This podcast is supported by the Department of Education and Training through our partnership on the Real Skills for Real Careers strategy. You can check out myskills.gov.au to look up courses to progress or start your tradeswoman career. If you've enjoyed listening, please leave us a 5-star rating. Until next time, catch you later.